This is Health Frontiers, and I'm Nancy Ross. And Nancy Ross is my old name. Lexi Ross is my new name, and I forgot for a moment because I am interviewing Nancy Van Dommelen tonight, who is the author of Dreaming a New World, A Spiritual Journey of Hope and Transformation, and The Higher Dimension, Our Next Home. And Nancy has a very interesting story. She was a very, what I would say, conservative educator, administrator, and she had some life-changing experiences that really brought some new ideas, new concepts, and some channeling information that she never expected to receive. So good evening, Nancy.
Hello, Lexi.
I can't believe I called myself Nancy again. That is so funny. Anyway, I'm so glad to have you on the show. And you have so many interesting ideas and concepts in your book. And I wanted to have you talk to our listeners about how you went through this amazing transformation. What exactly facilitated it? How did you react to what the changes you were experiencing?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Lexi, very much for inviting me to speak on your program and to visit with you. I do appreciate it.
Well, it's fun to have you.
Thank you. Well, it all began back in about 1979 when our youngest son, Dan, was killed in a climbing accident and in the mountains of Colorado. And about 2 or 3 years later, a friend suggested that I pray and meditate and have a pad and of paper and pencil available there, and to see if I could journal, if anything would come after I had gone through that process. And I was somewhat familiar with it, but I thought about it for a while, and then I decided that I would go ahead and do it. And it was quite an eye-opening and life-changing experience for me, because after my period of prayer and meditation, I picked up a pencil thinking, well, nothing is probably going to come from this. And my hand started to write with a speed that surprised me. And it came, and what I wrote came in letter form. It was a letter from our son who had passed over. And it said, "Dear Mom, I'm here to help you get started on this. Don't be afraid. This is something that you are able to do and you were meant to do." And then he went on to tell me some of the things that had transpired around his leaving. Well, I really didn't know quite what to make of it. And
did he explain why he had to leave? I mean, was that something you talked about?
Well, he did over time, about a period of 6 months to a year. I had 3 or 4 letters. Now, oh, by the way, these all came through in letter form.
Uh-huh.
And I had a number of letters from him, and then I had a couple of incidents where I actually felt like I was communicating with him. And what he basically said was that he was only meant to come for a given period of time, and it was not to be very long.
Yeah, I think that happens for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And that he accomplished all that he was meant to accomplish in this lifetime, and it was time for him to leave.
Well, I know that was more comforting to you, wasn't it?
It really was comforting. Although I have to say, there's a part of me, you know, I was born and raised in the Midwest, and there was a part of me that thought, I wonder if I'm deluding myself here. And so I sat very quietly with this experience and didn't tell anyone about it.
Really?
I didn't even tell my husband for 3 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, he's a lawyer. He was a lawyer and an engineer, and his frame of reference didn't really include this type of experience, and I wasn't sure how he would take it. And I had to kind of sit with it. And what I found is that I started about twice a month, I would get a strong impulse that I needed to go pray and write. And I would do that. And what I received was, and it wasn't always from our son, what I received was information that helped me with my own life, with issues that were occurring in my life. But it was from a very different perspective than what I had. It seemed to be a broader perspective.
Can you give me an example?
Well, let me see. There were so many, and it was so long ago. This was back in 1982, 83. One example I can give you is that I started having some symptoms that indicated that I might be having some serious physical problems. And it came up within 6 months after, my son died. And, a letter I received told me exactly what was happening and that it was
a letter from the other side.
From him. Mm-hmm. Exactly what was happening, and it wasn't of a serious nature, and some of the things that could be done to alleviate the process. And
can you talk about what that was, or would you rather?
Well, I think I'd just soon keep that.
Okay.
You know, I thought that I had a cancer of some sort.
I see.
And that it might have been in the intestinal area. And so when I went to a doctor, of course, to be tested, I found out that there wasn't anything wrong, and that it was just the extreme stress that I was experiencing was bringing forth these symptoms.
Uh-huh.
But many times, and, you know, Lexi, I'd have to go back and read. It's been so long ago. But I do recall the essence of it. Many times I would encounter things in other people or in relationships, and I would see them from my perspective.
Uh-huh.
And then when I would receive a letter from Spirit, it would be a very different view of the situation. And I can't give you anything specific right at the moment, but it happened over and over again. And it just expanded my concept of what was going on in my life and how to deal with it.
Your assumptions sometimes were inaccurate, and they were giving you the truth of the situation, which brought
mm-hmm.
things to a higher light.
That's exactly right. And what it did for me over time is it established a validity to information I was receiving.
I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine you needed to experience those kind of things. If you start hearing voices and you're not sure, you know, anybody that would begin to hear voices would doubt their credibility.
Well, I never heard voices. It was more like when I would quiet myself. It's almost analogous to a computer. It was like a software was being downloaded into my brain. I was just getting mental information.
So it was more like a knowing.
Yeah, and it was kind of like putting a program into a computer. And I would write just so rapidly that I could hardly get it down. And so over time, I grew to trust this. And on through the 80s and early 90s, I started to receive information that seemed to have a broader application than just for me personally. And I found that interesting. And I wondered what the significance of it was. And then about in 1997 or so, if I could back up for a minute, I started to receive information from what seemed to be a group consciousness,
uh-huh.
or a group soul, and the information took on a very different tone. It was broader in context.
But in the beginning, you felt like it was just one or two voices, isn't that right?
Well, one or two beings, because I never did hear voices.
Okay.
Uh huh.
Well, how did you discern the difference between the two beings?
I'd get a signature. Just from the end, the letter would be written to me, Dear Nancy, and it was either signed John, and the handwriting was a very large male handwriting. And then, for a period of time, I received very gentle messages that were signed Mary.
I see.
And then after that, I just, seemed to be in touch with a larger consciousness, a group consciousness, and the signature was just a symbol. It was half of a figure eight horizontal with two lines through it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
and,
how long did you hear the voices of the two individuals before the group soul moved in?
Well, I received the messages, because again, I didn't receive voices, but I hear voices, but I received the messages, I have all of these journals filled with these transmissions, I grew to call them, and I would say it was in the early 90s,
uh-huh.
around 90, 91. And then I was asked about 1997 if I would be willing to put myself forth in service and receive information that could be put in book form. But this was a very serious request for me because what I was doing, I was a very public person. I had been a teacher, an administrator. I had served on a lot of public boards, elective boards, and what I was doing privately, quietly, within my own home was very different than the person that I was out in the world. And so I had a real concern about the change that this would bring about in my life. And I thought about it at some length, and then I decided that the wonderful help and uplifting information and loving support that I had received down through the years, I could not turn my back on that and a request. And I had grown to really trust it. And so I agreed to do that. And that's how these two books came into being.
Well, when we talked earlier, you mentioned that you really don't remember what comes through on the channeling, that you just kind of sit yourself down and the writing comes through, and you don't even know what you're writing. So it's all done, right?
Well, I know what I'm writing. I have a hard time always remembering it. You know, I'm fully conscious. Now I go to, I was asked to do this on a computer, so I had to learn how to use a computer because I was handwriting it before. And I go to the computer after a period of meditation, and then I just start to type out whatever comes, and it comes very rapidly.
That's amazing.
It is amazing because I've done a lot of writing in my life, you know, reports and things like that. And it's kind of a laborious process, just finding the right sentences and phrases to describe what you want to say. This is very different. It just flows through. And the reason I don't remember it is because I didn't intellectually generate it.
Right.
When I go to the computer, I have absolutely no idea what is going to come.
Well, now, how do you know when to go to the computer? I mean,
well,
do
I
just
know.
Get a feeling that you're supposed to go, or do you have a set time where you mm-hmm. establish a writing time? Or?
Well, in the beginning, it was just whenever I have the strong sense to do it.
Okay.
When I was working on the second book, The Higher Dimensions, Our Next Home, I set up a regular schedule of four times a week for a couple of months. And that took a lot of energy. In the first book, Dreaming a New World, the first chapter I wrote myself and, cognitively.
Uh-huh.
And it described the whole process of our son's death and how I had come to this phenomenon and also described what I was being asked to do to prepare myself. To be able to receive this information. And then from that point on, everything else in the book and in the whole second book, The Higher Dimensions, Our Next Home, was just what I had received when I would go to the computer and sit down and write.
I have to ask you, how long were you channeling this information before you told your husband?
3 years.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, he wasn't really happy to hear about it.
I bet he wasn't. You know, there are so many people right now that are having similar circumstances, and I'm sure it's very comforting to our listeners who have had these experiences to know that someone else is receiving the same kinds of information and the process that you go through because it is a shock. It's such a different reality than what we're used to on this third dimension. So it's pretty amazing when it starts happening, really.
It truly is, and it was amazing and life-transforming for me. Because gradually over the years, I saw myself in a very different context. One of the main messages that comes through in both of these books is the extreme importance of meditating, connecting with, the creative source, both within us and in the universe, and how this changes us. And it really has changed me dramatically. I'm a very, very different person than I was when I started this process. And I think a better person. At least
well,
I'm
in
more
what
at
way?
Ease.
How do you see yourself as being so different?
Well, I would say that I was very outward oriented, and I was somewhat driven, I would say. Others might think it was more so than I am saying. And I was extremely active in the world. I never took time to be receptive or to go within. And as I started this process, it started to quiet me down. And you have to be receptive to be able to receive information from the realm of spirit. You have to open yourself up, and you have to, I think there were aspects of myself that weren't very trusting
mm-hmm.
about certain elements in life, and I had to trust that I was not deluding myself. Of course, I tested it for a long time to make sure. Now I find that I'm not nearly as interested in being as active in the world. I love the quiet and the peace of going within. And by the way, I had a writer's block before then. I didn't even write thank you notes.
Is that right?
And now I love to write. I love to go to the computer and receive whatever's coming. And there's supposed to be a third book. It's supposed to be a trilogy.
Okay. Well, I want to give the telephone number in case anybody wants to call in to ask any questions. That number is 888-268-4313 if there's anybody in the audience that has any questions for Nancy. Nancy, what do you think in the two books that you've written now, what are the things that stand out the most for you as being the most pertinent or relevant to our lives? I know there's a lot of things you cover, but can you mention maybe one or two points that you think just really resound for you?
Oh, gosh. There are a lot of things in both of these books, but I think that the key message or theme from both of these books is that information from the realm of spirit says that we're moving into just wondrous times. And for many people, I don't think they look at this as wondrous. They say that human beings are taking a giant step up the spiral of life, a great evolutionary step. So therefore, we need to see our lives and ourselves with clarity and with truth. Only then can we start the process of creating a new and better world. And so these books deal with topic after topic, bringing a spiritual perspective to key issues of our time. And a view that's often startlingly different from that which is commonly held by many. And that's how, for instance, just to give you just a few examples, and then I do want to answer your question because it's hard for me to pick what is the most important. But to show you the difference between a human perspective and a spiritual perspective before we go into something specific, to take most human beings, spirit, this group, soul says, act out of two basic motivators, either desire or fear.
That's true.
And spirit says that we need to look at what really are the two underlying motivators always in any human experience. One is the lesson to learn, that we have a lesson to learn by what's happening to us. Or we have an experience to enjoy. That's quite a different.
Absolutely.
And if we can start to look at our lives that way, with everything that comes into our life as a lesson we need to learn or an experience to enjoy, it eliminates and removes that intense desire or that fear that constricts us. For instance, they talk about death. how so many people look at death with great fear, with denial, and even with loathing. Because many people believe it's the end of consciousness.
Right.
Spirit says that it's a time of transition. It's an ending and a beginning. That there is no cessation of consciousness. That we honor the end of the life cycle and the joy of being back in the realm of spirit. And it's a time of great celebration.
Oh, one door closing and another opening.
Yes.
People could look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. That's a very different way of, I think in our lives today, death is viewed as a time of great mourning and grief.
I know.
And I know that's the way it was after this death of our son. I have learned to look at death very differently. So that's just one example. I think that, in Dreaming a New World, I know that your program is, focuses on health, new frontiers in health. In Dreaming a New World, many topics that have to do with health, are addressed. And
well, one question that I have in respect to what you just said, you were talking about, everything being a lesson. Well, I noticed that you had, a chapter on addiction. What, you know, when someone is really addicted to, say, alcohol, what can he possibly see about that addiction? How would he look at that addiction differently?
Well, that is, the information on addictions I found fascinating because it said that there are patterns of behavior that arise out of trauma and pain, and they affect the daily life in many negative ways. You know, they said that the electrical system governing the brain and the central nervous system registers at a basic level the negative stimuli that happens to the person when they experience trauma or great pain. The emotional body reflects the initial shock with its attending anger, grief, or fear, and then the message is sent on to all the cells of the body where the memory is stored until it's processed and released at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a lot about addiction counseling, but maybe you can speak to this, Lexi, but what I do know about it, I haven't heard a lot of emphasis on the storage in the cells of the body, the pain and trauma. Have you encountered that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's likened to the miasm that you discover later in your book. I think it's
mm-hmm.
just, you know, it's the escape from the pain, the emotional pain that people have endured either during their childhood or some trauma in their life, and they just can't face it. But I was curious as to what the book says about addiction.
Well, it says that it, let me open just and just give you a little bit of what it said here. It says this negative energy from the trauma is felt at the deepest level as a contraction of vital force, preventing the body from feeling the free flow of vibratory essences, which are constantly circulating in our world. And so the contraction or blockage is then registered at the physical, emotional, or mental level as kind of a nagging restlessness, anxiety, or agitation.
Uh-huh.
And this drives the individual to find an outlet that will give relief. And so that outlet can be work, play, drugs, alcohol, overeating, continuous talking, sex, or any other series of self-destructive repetitive actions that they use to assuage the pain. So, and right now there is so much pain in the world that many, many people are acting out addictive behavior.
Well, I think that truly if you look at our parents' generation and even the parents of my children, I would say when my kids were growing up, I noticed that either one or both parents were alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a tradition in our society
yes.
to block out our pain through alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Now, or drugs. There's
or
no,
drugs.
Much of that now.
But most, I think that probably alcohol use is even, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I can't even say that today with Prozac and all the antidepressants that are
mm-hmm.
administered. You know, it's just another way of hiding addictions, really.
Well, what they say, I agree with you, and what they say here is that it needs the addiction needs to be dealt with at many different levels. It needs to be dealt with as a physical level, and I don't know whether it mentions, I'll have to go back and check, 12-step programs are helpful. I personally believe that.
Yeah, no, the book definitely mentions 12-step programs. It's so funny that you can't remember what you've written.
Well, because I didn't intellectually generate it.
No, I know it.
But you think after going back over it a few times I'd remember. I don't know. It's kind of like a sieve, I think. But then one needs to look at the things that can be done to help the addiction physically. And they say that many more methods will be discovered to help that physical level addiction.
You mean in the future?
Yeah, and they talk about it has to be dealt with also at the level of, you know, it's a mind-body-spirit issue. So then to move on into the mental-emotional, I do know that flower essences are being used more and more with addictions because they help the emotional state. And there has to be a change in their mental view of what they're doing. The addicted person.
How does one, I mean, that's a really good question. How does one change their mental view? I mean, what happens, aside from having, do you think that just a serious trauma or accident or some bodily injury, is the only way to create a change in consciousness or, you know, a death in the family? I mean, why is it that some people have these amazing consciousness shifts and others don't?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, Lexi. I think I can only speak from my own experience level because I've been able to deal with some of the issues in my life. I think there has to be a willingness, and this is what the information from Spirit says. One must be willing to look at one's behavior with a clear, discriminating eye. You know, there has to be a desire for self-improvement with a willingness to make a firm commitment to it. This is all happening at the mental level. And then one needs to become knowledgeable about what constitutes addictive behavior. Once all these factors are in place, then the person needs to make a courageous personal inventory of their actions, which is one of the things that's recommended in the 12-step program.
Right.
You know, so if for instance, a person is addicted to drug usage, treatment and rehabilitation can be found. You know, that if you're entered with firm intent, which brings the mental process in, can bring success. And I think the people that don't succeed haven't reached that place of firm intent, willingness to take responsibility for their actions, desire to really change this addiction and to heal it. Don't you think?
Absolutely. I think that you know, I guess that's why they do interventions with people, because, mm-hmm. you know, if enough people sit someone down and say you have a problem, maybe they're shocked into action because mm-hmm. left to their own, you know, resort or their own will to do it, sometimes it just doesn't work. So it's a touchy situation. And, you know, it seems like it's sort of analogous to where we are on the planet right now, because there's, you know, I think there's a greater body of people waking up and mm-hmm. wanting to do something for the earth than ever before. And yet we still have this portion of the population that seems to be in denial. And it's sort of, you even mentioned in the book about, you know, perfectionism. There's, you know, that so many of us are driven mm-hmm. by this sense of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And yet we look around and we see corruption that exists within our politicians and our corporate leaders, and it's just such a dichotomy. What is, you know, what are the spirit guides saying about what we should do to take responsibility for this new world that we're trying to create?
Well, first of all, they say we have to heal ourselves.
Okay.
We have to heal and strengthen ourselves physically, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. And just to go back for a second to this question of addictions, the final area for healing of addictions is a spiritual area. And they say, you know, we need to be, a person that's in the throes of addiction needs to be healed spiritually. And the way to do that is by establishing daily practices where time is set aside for silence, prayer, meditation, or connecting with nature. So to go back to your question, what can we do about this now? And that leads us into some other topics, particularly those that are brought up in the second book, The Higher Dimensions.
Right.
But we need to start with ourselves. We need to take responsibility for our emotional healing and for our psychological healing and our spiritual healing, as well as our physical, because they're all intertwined. And as we do that, and there's much talk in this information about energy and about vibratory waves and about light as indicating the presence of spiritual energy. And the more we heal ourselves individually, the more light we emit. And that light is healing for the earth and is healing for what is happening on the earth. And so that's where we start.
So in other words, we are radiating the very healing energy that we need to heal the whole earth as individuals.
We have that capability. Now, whether we do it or not depends on, what they speak to consistently throughout the two books is the importance of meditation, of receiving. They say we are receptors for the creative energy of the universe, that we receive from the creative source. When we open ourselves up and seek it out, we receive that creative energy. We then, in turn, are meant to transmit that out in healing energy by consciously, with intent, thinking in this manner to heal the earth and to heal the all those that live on the earth, you know, the human beings, the animals, and so on.
Does the book suggest any particular meditation, or does this mean quieting yourself?
It speaks mainly to meditation, no particular technique, but it does speak about when there's that section in the second book, The Higher Dimensions, about how we actually access the next dimension above us, which is the fourth dimension. It talks about the importance of breathing, and it emphasizes it very, very strongly, that the deep rhythmic breathing, which some people call yogic breathing, helps raise the consciousness. It's almost like filling a balloon when we do this. So it emphasizes that. It emphasizes just the importance of sitting quietly, closing one's eyes, breathing quietly, and sinking into that state where we actually make a connection with that source within us that is spirit. And it says that this meditative process is extremely beneficial to the physical body. And it says that it's like rewiring our body from 110 voltage to 220, and how it expands the capacity of our brains when we meditate. Right now, we're using about 10% of the capacity of our brains, and it says it will raise it to 20 to 30% because it opens up new pathways in the brain.
So does that give those give us the ability, say, to see auras or to be more psychic or intuitive, or, I mean, those fourth and fifth dimensional capacities that some people in this dimension certainly enjoy already, but I would imagine that we will be expanding those as human beings.
Well, this is what they say is true, and this is what, in fact, there's very interesting information in both books, Dreaming a New World and The Higher Dimensions, our next home, about the world to come and how this new human species that is being birthed at this time, that we are progenitors of this species, and how advanced human beings in the future will be as they develop these greater abilities, and how they will be able to communicate telepathically, and how they will be able to assemble and dissemble their own atomic structure so that they can move through other dimensions. Right now, it's so interesting what they have to say about the fourth dimension, which is the dimension of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that our view of time is not an accurate view when we look at it through past, present, and future as a linear process. They say time is the eternal now, where everything is happening simultaneously.
Exactly.
And that's a fascinating idea.
That's a message that's coming in from a lot of places right now, that whole concept of time being simultaneously. The way I've seen it described is it that time or reality goes in spirals, and we're just at different places on the spiral
mm-hmm.
of time, but they can all be happening simultaneously. Well, let me ask you this. We cannot talk about the future without talking about these impending catastrophes and disasters that the planet is, you know, so many people have predicted that we're going to have to go through this major cleansing. And I wanted you to kind of address that from your book's perspective.
Both books address this
yeah.
question. And they say we're in a time of great awakening. We're at a time where many cycles are ending, the longest of which is a 500,000-year cycle. And they say that we are moving. They even talk about how our solar system is moving through the galaxy and through the central portion of our galaxy. A place that has a great deal of creative stimuli, which will be impacting us. But in regards to what's happening here right now, they say that the Earth is going through, you know, the question about why we're having natural disasters.
Uh-huh.
Would you like to have me speak to that?
Sure.
That'll,
yeah.
They said there are three reasons why we're having natural disasters. One is, you know, because many people have said, is God punishing us?
Right.
And they say, no, it's not God punishing us. It's part of the Creator's plan that the inhabitants of the Earth go through ongoing cycles of death and rebirth, joy and sorrow. As the soul develops, it's meant to experience every type of experience, both very positive and very negative. And so there, in the plan for the Earth, there is this cycle of death and rebirth. And it is not punitive in nature. It just is what it is for the development of the soul. Secondly, it said that the Earth is moving through a painful initiation. Initiation is an intensely painful experience that raises consciousness. And her pain is reflected in the turmoil of the many natural disasters we're having. It's essential that the souls on Earth develop an expanded view of themselves from a planetary, galactic, and universal point of view. And so the Earth has to raise her consciousness. She has to go through painful experiences so that she can provide a surface upon which this new species, which is going to be coming forth onto the Earth in the coming centuries, can reside.
And so you're speaking about Earth as an actual being, a female being.
That's right. She's a feminine being. She is a feminine entity of great power and beauty. And because she is feminine, the Earth is primarily earth and water, which are the two feminine elements. And because she is in such travail and turmoil now, every place it says in the higher dimensions, every place where there is water, oceans, lakes, rivers, ponds, all of them are going to be in upheaval and turmoil. And I just watched on the news today about these storms that are coming in the West Coast, one after another. And, of course, we know about the tsunami a year ago and what's happened in the Gulf Coast down with Katrina and the other hurricanes. People are being impacted by water all over the earth. And this is reflecting her painful initiation. But the third reason why we are having natural disasters, this reason is being caused by the people on the planet. The anger,
the
greed.
The imbalances on the planet.
Yeah. The anger, the gripe, the greed, the strife, and the warfare are contributing to an increase in severe weather conditions. And political wars contribute to the imbalance of weather.
Oh, I believe that.
and is what they said.
I can't imagine. In fact, I even noticed this when Bush started sending off the weapons, in Iraq, whatever it was, a couple years ago. I even said to someone, "You wait and see. We're going to start having catastrophes of weather, of huge proportion." Because the planet was at such a delicate balance at that point. All the environmentalists were talking about that we were just on the verge of something devastating. Well, when they started setting off all those bombs, that's what triggered it.
I totally agree with that, just personally. And what those on the realm of spirit have to say is that since the planet is a living entity, negative energy can move through the planetary energy grid. Which is just like a human body circulatory system.
Right.
And so therefore, it doesn't necessarily always, the eruption or the severe weather condition doesn't always occur at the place where it's being initiated. It's like a cancer. It can move through the system.
And I would imagine that it's going to go to the weakest and most vulnerable places on the earth.
Which, look at the tsunami.
You know, exactly. I mean, it's like our human body. If we take toxins into our bodies, it's going to go to the place that's most vulnerable in our own bodies.
That's right, and it's interesting that I'd like to speak just a second about this the material that talked about the national initiation that is going on with the United States in Iraq, because one of the subjects that is brought forth with great force in the higher dimensions is the fact that we are now at a point in time in our human evolution where we have to address the issue of warfare. That it has been a common way of settling the differences between groups or countries or regions since the beginning
tribe,
of time.
You name it.
Yeah. And it is, if we are going to move forward, and this is what the spiritual intent is for this plan, we have got to stand up and stand firm against warfare being used as a means of settling disputes.
Yeah.
It is no longer acceptable in any way. And it's interesting that there is a chapter in Higher Dimensions called The Dance of Duality. And it talks about how our universe, when it was formed, a theme was established for the unfolding of this universe. And the theme was, oppose what is different from you until you see that you are both one. And what that means is that everything we encounter is going to have a dualistic polarity about it until we find unity. That is our test, to be able to find unity out of differences and opposites. And so, therefore, we have...
And that resonates from the individual throughout the whole society and culture.
Exactly. And look at the United States and Iraq. They are both going through a severe initiation or a traumatic series of events. And they're mirroring. Our country is mirroring Iraq, and Iraq is mirroring us. I mean, when our soldiers are walking through the streets of the towns in Iraq, soldiers were also walking through New Orleans. You know, great destruction and devastation has occurred in certain parts of Iraq, and it's also occurring in this country through weather.
That's true.
And there are strong fundamentalist religious factions in both countries that have very, have views, points of view that are, I don't want to be judgmental or political here, but...
Go ahead.
Well... but their points of view are extreme and may not necessarily reflect what is believed by the vast majority. And so, therefore, the United States is the aggressor and Iraq is the victim.
Absolutely. I think there's little doubt about that.
And so, therefore, the whole world is involved.
I mean, there's so many countries right now. I just got through talking to a gentleman the other night from Bosnia. And he's talking about the things that happened in Bosnia, and you know, there's so many there's similar situations going on in Ethiopia and many countries that are having conflicts. But our government's not interested in those because there's no oil there. You know, there has to be an economic interest. So that's why we've poked our nose into Iraq, because we wanted to take over the oil fields. And, you know, it's just so, it's so hypocritical, because we don't care if the rest of the world is suffering. You know, there's so much suffering going on right now.
And, yeah.
And it's not talked about in the newspaper. It's not talked about anywhere in the media. Only the issues, you know, having to do with this Iraqi oil thing is the one that's most prominent. It's very upsetting, really.
Well, according to the information in this, in the higher dimensions, the United States is going to suffer just as much as Iraq.
I believe that.
And the suffering will unfold, because that's what initiation is all about. And so there was another interesting segment in Higher Dimensions that talked about cycles, the spiritual cycles of individuals, of groups, of nations. And it said that the United States experienced the height of its cycle, its political cycle, during World War II, when it helped lead and galvanize the world against fascist tyranny. And it said that the United States is now starting on the downward portion of its cycle, and it will continue for some time, but it has reached its apex.
I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that. With the Bush administration, we began to see the decline, because during the Clinton administration, we had the most amazing political relations worldwide, and it has been totally, totally distorted and just disintegrated. Really?
Well, yeah, I think you used the word denial earlier on in our talk.
Yeah.
And this was cited also in Dreaming a New World, where it said that the people of the United States, one of their major issues is denial. And almost to the point of delusion at times, but extreme denial. And so therefore, as I look at denial, what I know about it is when someone is in extreme denial, it's usually extreme measures that have to bring them out of it.
Well, that's true. That is true.
So
I call it the brick to the brain. It's like you can tell somebody something very mildly one time, and then the second time you have to raise your voice, and then the third time you have to scream. And it's sort of like a brick to the brain. They don't get it until you absolutely create anger or a trauma or something, so that they have the wake-up call. It's. I mean, I don't know why human beings are so dense, but it certainly seems that that's our way of operating.
Well, another way is suggested here, and it's the way of spirit, and that is that as each person awakens, takes responsibility, what needs to be developed is love and respect, even for those that with whom we do not agree. And we do not agree strongly. And this is a real test for me, because I find it difficult to do. But we have to learn how to come from a position of respect and to generate cooperation with people, even those people that are doing things that are very counter to what we believe. And they talk about how it's like light bulbs are going on all over the earth, as people, I mean, you've read about people who've been demonstrating all over the earth about what's happening.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's as people stand up and say, this is what we want. We want peace. We want peace. We want to be able to live in cooperation with others. We want to be able to respect.
Absolutely.
And to be treated with respect.
Well, I think that, you know, well, first of all, we've had the largest numbers of people to demonstrate for peace in the last 2 years than have ever been in the recorded history. Unfortunately, our media did not report it. And, you know, I think the second step is that people have to hold others accountable, because we've allowed people to just, I mean, in corporations, people are, I have a friend right now who has uncovered some what I call corporate espionage or sabotage or something, And this poor woman is fighting this battle to try to uncover, and she is being thwarted at every turn. There's so many people that are afraid to lose their job,
mm-hmm.
and they just let the status quo go. And we can't do things like that anymore because, you know, our fear, like you said, our fear has kept us from standing up and having the courage to hold people accountable.
I agree with that. I definitely do, and I think naming what is what you see is happening is an important thing. But I read a lot this chapter in Higher Dimensions on the dance of duality, because this is something that I really need to learn in my life, is how you can. I believe in accountability. I served on a school district accountability committee in a major project for 2 years.
Great.
But we have to be able to speak to what is happening. We have to be able to hold people accountable, but somehow we have to get through the duality and the polarity and find union and find unity. We can, you know, it can't be a majority minority or we, us and them. This is the great challenge that we are faced with.
Well, I mean, that's easy to say until you're working for a corporation and you know that, you know, like Enron, where all the executives are lying their tails off and you're sitting there watching the corruption. What do?
You name it. What it is, corruption. And one of the things that I think is mentioned in both books is the universal law of cause and effect. Because in the first book, Dreaming a New World, there's a very interesting section on September 11th and what were the underlying spiritual themes that were unfolding with September 11th. So what they had to say was that we need to be able to recognize what is happening. We need to be able to speak to it. But at the same time, we have to find some sort of a unifying principle that can get us through it. Because, I know the point. I kind of drifted there a minute. But they talk about the universal law of cause and effect, that we don't have to worry about whether it's going to, once an action is put into motion, there is an unrelenting universal law. Once a cause is initiated, where the effect will come back to the source of the cause.
I think you need to explain that. I'm confused by that.
Well, in earlier times, people probably called it karma. But what they said is, once every action that is initiated or originated will receive a reaction. It's a law of physics too.
So in other words, whatever dark acts that our politicians may be swimming around in right now will finally surface, and they'll have to pay their price for their actions.
That there is an inexorable law of cause and effect. And this is a universal law. And, don't you notice that so much is coming out? I mean, it's almost like two or three times a week.
Yeah. There actually, according to the Vedas, you know, our time periods are divided into yugas.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposedly in the yuga now where all truths were surfaced. No matter how hard they try to keep things hidden, the truth is going to surface right now. So that's very comforting to me.
Yeah. And we don't always have to be the one to see that it can happen. We have to do our own work. We have to join with others in whatever constructive action that we can be involved in. And we have to name what's happening. I can't tell you how powerful that is. And we have to, through prayer and meditation, we have to direct as much light as we can onto the planet and into those dark centers.
That would include praying for the souls of these dark beings that are conducting all this madness right now, I would presume.
Yes, I think so.
As much as we don't.
Not an easy thing, is it?
Not an easy thing at all. You know, there's a topic here that there's so many things that people are confused about right now. And I think, at least watching the little small bit of television that I watch, this whole issue of sexuality is just so confusing and so insane right now. And I wondered what your guides say about, specifically about sexual relationships and how they're evolving right now.
Well, in Dreaming a New World, they say a lot about sexuality. It's hard to summarize it. I'll just say a few things about it. And then for a person who's interested in going further, you need to access the information.
Well, let's help our listeners how they can access this information. Again, Nancy Vandellin's book, Domelin's book, excuse me, Are Dreaming a New World and the Higher Dimensions Our Next Home? And the other one is, what is the second book, Nancy?
Dreaming a New World is the first book, and The Higher Dimensions Our Next Home is the second.
Oh, I read them together.
Yeah.
I got confused there for a minute.
And
yeah.
they can be purchased through a bookstore. If the bookstore doesn't have them, they'll order them. And we have our own website where they can be purchased.
Address, Nancy.
It's two addresses. One is Nancy Van Domelin, VANDOMELEN.com, or our publishing company is shiningmountain.net, and mountain is spelled out.
Okay, great. So if anybody's listening or, you know, checks in later to the archives and they want to see, there's some wonderful channeled information in these books, and it addresses a lot of specific issues that I know everyone will be interested in reading, but we were going to talk about the
sexuality
real quickly before we run out of time.
Well, in quick summary, they say that sexual union carries within itself a vortex of powerful energies that are released into the force field of those that are participating. And these energies remain there for some time. I think people don't think about this.
No, they don't.
I think they come together in a coupling or a joining, and it's done many times quickly or without thought, just for the physical release or the physical effect that is desired. Here they say that there's an energetic combining that is deep and very powerful. And so therefore, it's when a person leaves, or let's say two individuals are in a relationship for a period of time, and when they're in which there's a great deal of intense sexual union, it takes quite a period of time for that energetic connection to be severed.
I believe that.
Do you?
I know that's true. Well, first of all, it even says that in the Vedas. You actually contain, a woman contains the energy of her sexual partner up to 5 days after the act of sex.
Mm-hmm.
So, and takes all of his energy and vibrations into her body. And people don't realize what a serious act it is, unfortunately. We need more education about that issue.
And so therefore it asks people to look at this, the sexual act, with a very different view. To give it the respect and to recognize the power that it entails. There's talk in about human sexuality in the future. There's also they go into infidelity and commitment, and how one of the greatest of sufferings between men and women down the ages has been sexual infidelity. And again, there are polarities here. The polarities are unfaithfulness and commitment. And when two individuals come together and enter into the intimacy of sexual union, a bond of force is created that's not recognized, as we just said, in this day and age. And so therefore, it says that we probably go through a premise on all of this material is we live more than one lifetime. We live many lifetimes. And through those lifetimes, we grow and learn and experience, learn what it is to be human. But one of the things that is important to be learned is the ability to make a commitment and to keep it, and a commitment in the area of sexuality. And so that it's a far more significant and powerful act than people realize.
I would venture to say that making a commitment to integrity, to the health of our bodies, you know, by the food that we put in our mouths and
mm-hmm.
the commitment to be better people, and you know, it's all those messages are what occur over and over again in your books. And I want to recommend them to our readers, and the titles again are Dreaming a New World and the Higher Dimensions, Our Next Home, by Nancy Van Domelen. And Nancy, I feel like we could talk about your book for at least another hour.
I would love it.
Have to say goodnight, and it's been a pleasure to have you with us. And this has been Health Frontiers with Lexi Ross, and I appreciate you all listening. Good night.
Thank you, Lexi.
Good night.
Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.